rather complicated sugya of competition, Yerlitzar from Nasser Shachavero, going into someone else's business, Ani Mahabit Bukharora, a poor person who's seeking a crust of bread, someone else grabs it away. It's a complicated sugya. Anyone who really wants to delve into it shall look into the following tshuvas. There's a tshuva from the Yamshel Shlomo, Shlomo Luria, Simon Lamed Bov, Lamed Zayin, from his Talmud, the Masas Binyamin Simon Pov Zayin, tshuva from Sheiris Yosef, a contemporary of the Yamshel Shlomo, Simon Yud Zayin, and some type of Ayin Tess and Parshas Mishpat. It starts off with the Yamshel Shlomo. It starts off with the tshuva that he wrote when he was a young man. He wrote this as a response to an earlier tshuva. The story happened like this. The story is a little bit more complicated than I'm going to give it to you, but it goes back into the times when Jews made a living having concessions. This is a particular concession with whiskey. The person had purchased a 3-year concession from the government, and he had the rights for selling, sole rights, monopoly rights, to sell whiskey to the community. Before the 3 years were up, another person went to the government and purchased the next 3 years. He got wind of it and put up a fuss. And in the end, he lost it. So he sued the person who had taken it away from him. And the case came before a certain Bezalel, I don't remember his first name, and the Bezalel favored the plaintiff. He said that he has to give him back the concession that he had, because he had it first. He had no right to bid for it and take it away from him. And not only that, but due to the fact that he repurchased it, it came out that the price came out to be higher. He said that any losses, he sued him for not only for to retain, give him back the concession, but also any expenses that were incurred as a result of the fact that he went into to attempt to was successful in taking the concession away from him. His response was that I did take it away from him. He wasn't going to get it anyway. This was done on a 3-year basis. It was going to go to a non-Jewish person. Had he not intervened to take it for himself, it would have gone to someone else. It didn't belong to him, first of all. Second of all, he wasn't the one who went to the government. To the contrary, the people from the city council came to him and offered it to him because he had other concessions and it seems to be a better businessman. So on the basis of that, he claimed that he was not responsible. And the Yamshel Shlomo favored the defendant. And he said the defendant is entirely correct. He said, but in doing so, he went into writing a rather lengthy tshuva describing 4 different levels regarding when and if one is permitted to enter into someone else's field. It starts off with the Gemara in Kiddushin. The Gemara in Kiddushin at the beginning of the third parak says the following. Someone sends an agent to marry, to engage a girl to marry, and the agent went, took one look at the girl, and he said, that's not for him, that's for me. And he said, oh, he proposed instead of giving it over to his slichus, he said, how would you like to marry me? And he said, yeah, that's a good idea. So Morris says, Masha, also, also, what he did. He acts like a crook. The Lord then brings a story that one of the Amoraim was seeking to purchase a piece of land. He made some efforts to acquire a piece of land. And the another Amora bought it. So the one who lost out on the deal went and complained. He complained to the Sukhnafa. He said, and then he went back and complained to higher authority. And he said, well, let's wait till Yontif when everyone gets together. And Yontif, he said the following question. He asked the person who had purchased the field, if a real person is seeking a crust of bread, he's only on the half of the parah, he's looking to get a piece of bread, or go off of another way, another person comes and takes it away. What do you say about that person? So he said, Nikra Rasha, he's an evil man. He says, really? So my time, I'm a Ovid Hafi, so why did you do the same? So he said, Lavadatoy, I had no idea. No one informed me that someone else is looking for the land. Had I known, I certainly wouldn't have done so. So he said, oh, then we can fix the problem. He said, so sell it to him. So he said, no, that I won't do. I can't sell it to him because this is the first piece of land I ever acquired. It's not a good omen. But this is what I will do. I'll give it to him away. If he wants it, he can have it. To sell the first piece of land seems to be a bad omen, but to give it away is fine. He said, if he wants it, I'll give it to him as a gift. The other person refused to take it as a gift. I don't want to take it as a gift. So neither of the two used the land. He didn't want to use it because the other person had made his efforts to acquire it, and the other one didn't want to use it because he didn't want to receive it as a gift. So it became a piece of land that was Hefkel Rabbanim. It was used by the community of Rabbanim used the land. That's the end of the story. And anyway, we see that when a person is even making an effort to acquire something, if another person acquires it and takes it for himself, he is considered a Rasha. That's the way the seeming of the Gemara, the simple reading, and Rashi writes it that way. There have been a time asked a question from two pieces of Gemara, from two places. Gemara says that a Rosh HaMetziah, Mishnah, or Metziah, a person sees a Metziah, and he sends someone else to take it. The other one picks it up, and says he acquires it. That's one Gemara. Another Gemara says that two Aniyim are in the field, and one person takes his cloak and he throws it over it, and he's making an effort, obviously, to acquire some of the payah. He says, "Every nice to me, man, we take it away from him." He says, "Why should we take it away from him? He has made some major efforts to acquire it. The halacha should be that no one's allowed to take it from him. Adarabah. So why say, 'Every nice to me, man, we take it away, take it back from him'?" On the basis of that, the Rabbeinu Tam makes the following distinction. He says that Rashi says over there, it's a loaf of bread that didn't belong to anyone, so Hefker. The person's running after it to try to take it, and the other one sort of takes to grab it away. Rashi says it's Shel Hefker. He says Hefker, there is no thing like that. If this is Hefker, someone sees a 100-pound note on the floor, and there's a man rushing to get it, and you look around and you see what is he looking for, what is he trying to get, and he says, oh, there's a note, and you rush and you take it, you're perfectly within your rights. The fact that the person made an effort and started running a half a block to get it doesn't make it his. The only time we have a case of Ani Mahabat Vakarara, the only time we have a situation where a person is entitled to it is by Schiris or Mechira. A person is acquiring something through purchase, or is renting something, there we have a time. What's the time? There are plenty available. There's plenty other ones available. If you want to use your money to acquire something, there's plenty other things available. Why should you take your money to purchase something or to rent something where this person has already made his efforts, when you could take the same thing and find it elsewhere? You have no right to deprive a person of the efforts that he made to acquire something, when you could do the same and let him take what he was already seeking, and you could do the same thing somewhere else where no efforts were made. This is a gather of midas stone. This other person has already made his efforts, he already put out something, where, and you can do it elsewhere, and it doesn't cost him anything, and it won't cost you anything. So that's the way you should do it. Whereas, if you have an opportunity, and the opportunity will not appear again, you have every right as well as someone else has. The person made some efforts, so that makes it his. This is the abandoned time sheet. So therefore, if there's a 100-pound note on the floor, and it tells the person running away, the other person can't say, why are you picking up the 100-pound note that I was seeking? Go find some other 100-pound note. They said, this happens once in a lifetime. There's no opportunity like that. You can't provide me an equal opportunity. And if you can't provide me an equal opportunity, I'm entitled to it as well as you are. Whereas, in a situation where it's equal, you can do it the same place elsewhere. And this comes out frequently in a situation where people are seeking jobs, or the person is looking up for a job, and he's already made contact with the employer, and he's looking for the job, and there's plenty of jobs available, it doesn't have to be here, so you don't have a right to take, according to the Renatana, in the case of, he gives the cases by Malandim, by teachers who are seeking at that time tutoring jobs. The same thing applies if a person has already made efforts and is already close to a contract on it and acquiring it. You have no right to grab away the job that he has, because you can hire yourself out elsewhere. The Achronim deal with similar situations where things that you're looking for is purchased, but they're scarce. Supposing, for example, a person seeking a house that has 6 bedrooms. He has a large family, and he needs a 6-bedroom house. Supposing that he wants to live in a district that's only where Hum Jews live. It's true that England is a big place, and there may be at any one time 100 such houses for available, but in the Jewish district this comes up once in 2 years. So let's say a person has already made efforts, and you find out another person, according to this, would not be entitled with the din of Aniyam Hapa for Ferraro. He wouldn't be entitled because he made his efforts first to acquire rights of Aniyam Hapa for Ferraro, because this is a rarity. Where you can find me another one like it, and I will certainly leave you alone. It's the same situation with regard to any rare instance. Yamsur Slamer brings down in that tshuva that there are, on the basis of this, he starts this off this way, that there are 4 levels. There's 4 levels of level number 1 is Hefker. This is, he passes like the Rebbeinu Tam. That where the opportunity is not available, the person who has, who's made his efforts and has acquired the first rights gains nothing. It's not his. And the second case is where it is available. Where it is available, he says, therefore the person would be considered a rasha from doing so. But he says this is not enforceable in halach. It's you can call him a rasha according to some rishonim. According to some Achronim, you can even publicize, shame him publicly, call him a Russia, post things, stuff like that. You can call him a Russia publicly, but that's, if the person doesn't mind that, he can keep what he has acquired. These are the first 2 levels. The 3rd level. He takes from a Gemara and says, "Ani a manakif reisha zayis." The person climbs up on a poor person has peya. He's looking for peya, and he has a tree that there's aloes on it, but the aloes aren't falling down. So, what is the method of getting the aloes down? You climb up on top of the tree and you give where the branches have some give, and you shake it. So here comes the situation. There's a Oni, they picked up already the alt that are on the floor, and they want to get some more. So one Oni climbs up to the top and he shakes it. Another Oni says, "Thanks, bud." And he grabs all the owls for himself, packs it away, and he says, "Okay, I have it, thanks." So the one that says it's gezel, forbidden. Now it's really happy. Once it's gezel, and this is my focus in the Gemara, Ani Manav is gezel with the Raisa, gezel with the Rabban. Is it outright gezel or is it gezel? No real kinyan was made over here. So the gezel, the Raisa would be difficult to understand, but maybe there's some sort of kinyan of Hagbah. I'm not sure, quite sure about how it would work, but we passed him, and that's the Chachamim, that this is gezel mizer Rabbana. You want to ask the Kasha, what's the difference whether it's gezel deraisa or it's gezel Rabbana? But if it's gezel deraisa, you can go to court and get it back. If it's gezel Rabbana, you can't aim right to midayon. The fourth level comes from another Gemara. One level is that's the Menasa Bekah. Rabbein Tam asked the Kasha on himself, the Gemara and Bava Basra. The Gemara and Bava Basra talks about a person who has a store, or he has a mill, and another person wants to open up another mill on the same street. The Gemara says that if he belongs to a different city, he's not entitled to do so. Not only that, he has a right to sue him and get him out. If he belongs to the same city and the same street, then he is allowed. So at least in my book is Hanoi, we pass him a mice that he is allowed. But if he belongs to a different city, unless he pays taxes in this city, he is not entitled to, and if he did, that's considered outright ghetto. That is lacha that he could say, you have deprived me of my livelihood. And that, he has a right to sue. Now, in the third level, he has a question. An important question. He says, on the third level, where we say that the person who made a tircha, he made some efforts, he has a right to it and is gezel d'rabbana. So he goes back to the case number two, which is the case of umlanus, the case where is Ani Ma'apa Bacharara. He says Ani Ma'apa Bacharara also has to have a tircha. Why? Because the Rebbeinu Tam says that the reason he has a right to stop the other person from taking it is because why should you deprive the person of the tircha that he made? He's made some efforts. It seems that if he had made no efforts to acquire it, that he wouldn't have any rights to it. What's the basis of it? Because he made effort. Well, he also made an effort. What's the difference between this effort and that effort? We're saying that Ani Manakif is the reason because he put in a lot of effort. So you make a distinction. What distinction can you make between this and the other? Why would one be considered Gezel Drabbanon and one would be considered only Nikar Rashi because it's Ani Mahapur Havara? So the Yamsi Sarna comes up with this distinction. He says, this is real effort. What do you mean, real effort? It seems to me, physical effort. He climbed up to the top of a tree, he put in real hard effort, and that's what makes it his. Whereas the person on Ani Abba Chararo only made verbal effort, or maybe he walked towards it, he didn't put his life on the line, and he climbs up a tree, it's dangerous. So that's the way he makes the distinction. Amasa Binyamin suggests a different answer, which makes it seems to be a bit more logical, because it's hard to make it making the distinction between the two. How are we going to put the level of effort? I mean, how are we going to measure it? He makes a simple distinction. He says the person who was a manakib, the one who climbed up on top of it and made it available. It didn't exist to the other person until the person on top shook it down. If the person who created the availability is deprived of that, well, that's like Gesel Derabbanan. You're a leech. You're a parasite. You're taking off the other person's efforts and taking it all for yourself. He says that would be considered Gesel Derabbanan. Whereas the case of Ani Mahapa Karora, it wasn't the situation where the person created it. It was just that he was looking and making an effort to acquire it. Now, that distinction should be a clear distinction. Except we come to Gemara Bava Basra. Gemara Basra says the thing: Nirtzei Akum Harein Kehefta. Property of a goy is hefta. Gemara, I'm certain, has been used, taken out of context by many anti-Semites to say that Jews say that all our property doesn't mean anything; we can take whatever we want. They say, well, they have to be the end of the Gemara. Gemara says we're talking about a specific case. What is a Nirtzei Akum Harein Kehefta? Well, it says if a person acquires land, and the method of acquisition of land when you buy from a non-Jew is to pay cash and have a contract. The cash itself is not good enough, and the contract itself is not good enough. You need both. However, if the person was so foolish as to give cash in advance and not take the contract at the end until later, but the moment that he gives the cash, the guy who has the cash doesn't care about his land anymore. He has his money. The Jew, until he gets his contract, hasn't acquired it. So what's the status of this piece of land in between the time that cash was paid for fully and the time that the contract has been handed over to the Jewish person? What's the status of it? It is hefker. That's what the Gemara says. That's nifsei akum shehefker. The land of a goy is hefker under these circumstances. Anyone now who comes and takes it can keep it. Someone makes an effort, makes a chazaka at this point, and acquires the land, it belongs to him. It's a piece of hefker land. So the Rashbam, in the quoting that Gemara, says, yes, it is true that if the person comes and takes it, it doesn't belong to him, but he certainly considered a rasha for doing so. Why? He says this is not worse than the case of Ani and Mahapach Pacharara. It's not the case of Ani Mahapach Pacharara. The person made efforts to acquire it and you grabbing it away from him, but it's certainly not worse than Ani Mahapach Pacharara. So the Rush brings it down and says, well, the Rebbeinu Tam would not agree with that. Why? But this is hefker. The Rebbeinu Tam holds that if something is hefker, it's an unusual opportunity. That's something that you're not going to acquire another opportunity like that. He has the rights to take it. He can't say to the person, "Go get another one." When am I going to be able to pick up a piece of land for nothing? So says the Rebbeinu Tam would hold that it's permissible. So the Amshir Shlomo asked, or this some Sofer also asked the same question, why would that be permissible? If we take on to the consideration of the Masas Binyamin, how did that become hefker? It became hefker because this person laid out good cash, and that's how it became available. Because of he put out the cash and made it available, that's only a manakif for Rosh Hashanah. So the answer Shlomo took from this rush that obviously the rush does not agree to this svar. That's why he did not, because the rush said that this is similar to the case of Ani Amahapa for Karora rather than the case of Ani Amanake for Rosh Hashanah. On the basis of that, since the rush helps that way, so the answer Shlomo says, I'm looking for a different distinction. And that's why he suggested the distinction is that the person puts physical effort into it, or is it merely putting out verbal and even monetary efforts. So on the basis of that, he says that even if a person puts out money and when we talk about Ani Amhapa Chororo, not only if he puts out an effort because he rushed it, but even if he puts out money for it, that would not give him any acquisition. If that would not give him any acquisition rights, if this is an item which is not easily attainable, and therefore he says that in a situation where they're looking for a job, whatever, they're looking for a business, a person made out major efforts to acquire it, and they put out cash for it. He said that still would not give that person, if it's something which is an unusual opportunity, would not give the first person rights to acquire it merely because he put out money, merely because, it's difficult to me because I'm just asking my own question. Money represents a lot of effort. In other words, a person puts out 100,000 pounds to buy a piece of land, you have to consider what did the person do to get the 100,000 pounds in the first place. He could have been toiling for 10 years to acquire that kind of money. The last of the four categories has to do with the Gemara in Bava Basra. I roughly mentioned it, I alluded before to it. The Gemara says that the Machlokas Rav Huna and Rav Huna Bered Rav Yeshua, where as a person who has set up a business and the other person wants to put up a competing business, whether the person has the right to stop the other person from putting it up, and there's a machlokas between Rav Huna and Rav Yeshua, and more paskins, restraining paskins, more brings down Rav Huna saying that you're not allowed to, paskins like the Chachamim or Braisa, and Rav Huna and Rav Yeshua says that you are permitted to, unless the person comes from the outside. If the person comes from the outside, there is one other case where they all agree, according to the Sam Sofer, that the Gemara says, the Gemara brings down, Marfikin, Matsudas Adog, if a person has a fissure, and he has his nets located one place, so you have to distance yourself. You can't put up your nets in the other person. And that's the Kasha that Benetan asked Bishah Hefker. Bishah Hefker, why should that be forbidden for me to put up my bed just where you are? So he gives two answers. One answer is loss of the cup. It's his livelihood. Once the person has a livelihood, you're not entitled to take it away from him. The second answer he gives is, well, what's the taina? The taina is it's an opportunity that's unrealizable. Well, it's not. There's plenty of fish in the ocean. Go upstream. Go to a different place and locate it. It's the same swara. Akoponim. One element we do see from the Rebbe and Tam is we make a distinction between a one-time thing and a person who already has acquired a numness. A person who has an acquired a numness, there it comes into a different category. However, we're dealing with rights to acquire. The Sam Sofer makes a distinction in his tshuva. He talks about this tshuva, and I'm getting close to the end as much as I can put in. I should say that there's a lot, whether or not I've been speaking of it, you'll find in these tshuvas. Distinctions are in some cases hair splitting. He makes a distinction between two people in the city, one putting up a business and the other one won't put the other person out of business. In other words, there's enough room for both, although it might diminish a second person's panasa. It's not going to destroy him. In a case where it would destroy him, let's say it's a small village and there's only room for one bakery. Another person wants to put up a bakery, he says that might be a problem for the Sakya Lakai Sovagami. It might be that that's forbidden. But if there is room for both, it's just a question that instead of making a very large panasa, he'll make a lesser panasa, but two people can make a living. Nonetheless, it means down that the Gemara says, among a list of it seems to be Mila de Chassidus, more in the Makkos, he says, Elisha's real life teammate doesn't mean that he didn't defile the other person's wife, but it means he didn't take away the person's livelihood. There is listed among the whole thing of list of Mila de Chassidus. So he says, Mila de Chassidus means even in those situations where you would be permitted to enter another person's panasa, where you do live in the same city and you're not going to take away entirely his panasa. nonetheless, neither the Hasidus is to try to find something that doesn't harm anyone else who is already in business. It's very difficult in a very large city, and maybe it doesn't even apply in a very large city to find a parnosa that other people haven't entered. But in a village, in a smaller village, these things certainly would apply. And that's as much I can squeeze in half an hour. Okay.